How does Belichick do it? How does he get the former MVP that every team passed on every day for 4 months? In a related world, how does Mina Kimes do it? Sorceress here. She had this 4 months ago. Mina and Israel Gutierrez with us today. Hello, Israel. Happy birth week, which means I get to say Happy New Year to you. And L. Duncan, welcome back. Second career appearance. 100% career winning percentage. Keep it up. All right, Mina, talk to me about this. How did the Patriots pull this off? How good is this for Cam? How good is this for New England?
Well, before we get into any of that, I would like to extend my condolences to fans of other AFC East teams. Because, Tony, this is the stuff of horror movies. Just when you thought you were finally safe, the killer is back. And New England's more than back. I think they're actually contenders. That defense, which was elite last year, is still going to be very good. Brought back most of their secondary, which is top level. The offense, I actually think, is going to be a little bit better, too. Not just because of Cam, but because the offensive line is healthy. The wide receivers literally could not be worse than they were last year. It's Sanu's healthy as well. And I think Josh McDaniels is going to do a phenomenal job of tailoring this offense to Cam Newton's skill set, just like he's done with every other quarterback. I think he's going to look at what Cam did in Carolina under Norv Turner in 2018 when he excelled in the first half of that season, steal a lot of those ideas, and if Cam is healthy, this is a contender.
All right, so let me get to the headline here. You think they're already better off than they were last year with Tom Brady, these Patriots?
Not because of Cam over Tom Brady, but for other reasons, players coming back and being healthy, I do.
Okay, and just so we're on the record here, you think he's the best quarterback in the AFC East? I want to make sure every other team in the AFC East can hold this over you.
I think if he's healthy, I'm going to use that caveat a lot today, then I think he's the best quarterback in the AFC East.
Israel Gutierrez, how did the Patriots pull this off, and how good is this for them?
Well, I'll start off here. The if he's healthy conversation. Yeah. If Cam Newton is healthy going into next season, there are any number of teams who would be better off with him than their starting quarterback. So in that scenario, of course, Bill Belichick did a great thing for his team if Cam's healthy. The other thing I think that helped Bill or that helped the Patriots do this was sort of Cam Newton's seemingly attitude. It didn't seem that he was going to be just okay taking a backup job somewhere. So he looks at the situation and says, well, this could be a starting position for me. I don't see many other teams where he could have gone in and said, been the favorite to be the starter in a situation where the team is supposed to win. And I think that's where you're looking at the Patriots now, again, assuming Cam being healthy, is that they are in a position to win. So, I do think that the rest of the league did the Patriots a favor, but I also think Cam Newton himself did the Patriots a favor by sort of portraying this image of, hey, I'm a starter, I'm an MVP, I will not be a backup somewhere.
You brought that up. No other team, serious interest. I think that surprised all of us when we read that report.
Maybe the Browns.
No other team, serious interest. Maybe the Browns. But Israel, you said maybe a chance to start. You think this is a competition between Jared Stidham and Cam Newton going into
no,
one of this season?
I was actually going to start off by sharing my condolences with two Jared Stidham sending
okay.
that.
Maybe
because
I
he had a good thing going
that.
There, but it's not
because
gonna
happen. I know, Mina, you've spent the last weekend of your life breaking down Stidham tape, and you'll never get that weekend back. Never get that podcast back that you did. L. Duncan, I'm going to bring you in here. What do you see from Cam in New England? How good can this be for them?
Poor Stidham, right? He had to play in the house that Cam Newton built, then he finally gets away, and it's like, nope, he's following you. However, I will say, like, it's such the Patriot way to literally make the most of a global pandemic, because to Izzy's point, it hurt Cam not being able to travel and meet with these teams, and it benefited the Patriots to the fact that they got a former league MVP for just a touch more money than what that YouTube star paid to have dinner with Tom Brady for charity. That is absolutely insane. As far as fit, it looked like this entire offseason that the Patriots were setting themselves up to be a run-heavy offense anyway, shoring up that offensive line, putting the tag on Joe Tooney. They're spending $30 million on the O-line. They drafted two tight ends in the third round that typically are more known for their blocking than anything else. So I think Cam's going to be a great fit in particular because he's able to improvise. And when you don't have an opportunity to work with the team a lot, which is what's going to be facing a lot of these guys because of the pandemic, and when you don't have a full grasp on the playbook, being able to just get it done with your legs and pull the ball down and run is going to benefit them greatly.
Yeah. L had jokes about his salary, but Mina, Richard Sherman, an observer here, called it disgusting that he had the $7 million contract just above that. Is that how you see it? How do you make sense of the money here?
Well, I think Sherman is right to observe that less talented quarterbacks got bigger contracts, but I really think this is good for Cam Newton. I'd rather take a little bit less now and excel in the Patriots, as we've seen so many players do, than go on to get paid elsewhere. I think of like Darrell Revis going and getting a big contract with the Jets. I think that's in the cards for Cam as well.
And I still want people on the record here, so here's a point-blank question. Who has more wins this season? Tom Brady and the Buccaneers, Cam Newton and the Patriots. L. Duncan?
Oh, it's for sure going to be the Bucs. I'm not nearly as optimistic about that Patriots defense as Mina seems to be. The Bucs defense is absolutely loaded. Their offense is obviously loaded. And we can talk about revenge all you want. Tom Brady has something to prove, and that's never a good thing.
Mina Kimes?
I'm going with the Bucs because the Patriots have the most difficult schedule in the NFL based on last year's strength. But I think they're going to be pretty comparable just team to team.
Israel Gutierrez.
I'm going with the Bucs too, but I think they're going to have to win more games. I think the Patriots could still win their division with, I don't know, 9-10 wins.
Another question for you, Mina. Do you think it's possible the Patriots triggered this news that they were signing Cam Newton to timeout with the news from the NFL, the punishment for cameras pointed at the sideline? This was the do your job gate, and this was $1.1 million fine and a stripping of their third round pick in next year's draft. How big a punishment is that, Mina?
It's huge. And yes, it is a little ironic that on the same day they get punished for using one cam, they're rewarded for bringing another in. I didn't think they were going to get docked a third.
I don't know about that one. That's 20 page material.
Third rounder's a lot. I will say that. It's a lot more than I thought, Tony.
Okay. Wait, I need to get the scoring right here. Thumbs up or thumbs down on Mina's.
Oh, yeah.
Really? Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Wow. You guys are a forgiving audience. Israel, how big a punishment is this?
I mean, it's a punishment for the rest of us who can't watch Do Your Job anymore. I mean, it was on my definitely on my must-watch list. I think it does get a little frustrating to not really know how to assess what the cheating has done to the legacy of, you know, these individuals, whether Bill Belichick or Tom Brady, or the team as a whole. And I think that's kind of frustrating because there's just been so much of it that you just get tired of it. I remember when this story came out, we were kind of laughing about it and wondering aloud whether it actually meant anything or whether Bill Belichick saying, hey, I have nothing to do with that, it was actually true. And meanwhile, we just, you know, went on with the story of the Patriots. So I think, you know, on the back end, when we actually find out what these cheating scandals meant to their wins and losses, maybe we can assess that. But right now, it's kind
of... Duncan.
You talk about legacy, Izzy? The real legacy is the Patriots PR because they literally have had to be the most versatile entity in all of football. They have had to cover and deflect for everything from Spygate to Deflategate to Rob Gronkowski saying that he would deflower Tim Tebow to their starting linebacker running down the streets naked on Spice. They are the real masters, and when it's all said and done, they'll be the greatest legacy the Patriots have ever had.
So many.
Yeah. You forget all those. You're right about that. I don't even remember. Yeah, absolutely. All right, we've been home. We're taking a break right here. When we come back, I want to talk about the NWSL restart, all the emotion at the anthem this weekend, and Israel Gutierrez, now that the schedule's out for the NBA, what your monorail usage is going to look like. Monorail.
Around the Horn is presented by Corona Extra. Find your beach. Part of Happy Hour.
Last week, we talked about Angel McCoutry petitioning the WNBA to allow players to put names on their jerseys. Black lives killed and lost. The NBAPA picking up on that with a plan for social justice uniforms, appealing for players to put causes on their jerseys. I want to ask how you see that going and what type of impact that might have, especially considering the other place athletes have demonstrated their beliefs, the national anthem, and what we saw at the NWSL restart this weekend. Emotion. Look at this here. Casey Short. Teams reportedly struggling with if everyone should kneel and what of players who don't kneel. Kim McCauley of All for 11 writing, it created a hostile work environment in which players were emotionally manipulated and teammates were pitted against each other. L. Duncan, how do you read all this? What type of impact do you think this might have?
I do have to say, I think it's incredible the turn of events that have now landed us at the spot where you're considered brave for standing and how that might be controversial. But in terms of the NBA, I think it's significant, not particularly surprising. They've always been the league that's sort of ready the quickest to adapt to the changing relevance of what's happening on the cultural aesthetics. I do think it's significant because they rarely, if almost ever, change their nameplate. They did it in 2014 for a nickname marketing campaign. They did this in conjunction with Nike, of course, who had to give the go-ahead to do it. We all know that Nike has never been afraid to sort of venture into those social justice waters, if you will. What I'd like to see happen from this is outside of just the messaging, and what I'd be interested to see, if there's some type of way that then those jerseys would be available to be purchased by fans, and then seeing some of those funds or some of the profits from that allocated towards some of these marginalized and you know, underutilized communities and towards some of these social justice causes. So I think I'd be interested to see what they do with that platform outside of just the expressions.
And Mina Kimes?
I think there's no universal standard here for what sort of messaging or action is truly impactful. It depends on the person who's listening, whether they're ready to listen. Speaking for myself, I was deeply moved by the sight of Julie Ertz and Casey Short that you talked about because of the interaction we witnessed and the glimpse I think that we fans got into how much this means to them. I think going forward with athletes, whether they're wearing nameplates or kneeling or not kneeling, it's those moments that are going to resonate. And it's why if the NBA players do this, I would love to hear those players talk about why those names and issues mean something to them, because that would truly be memorable.
Mm-hmm. Israel Gutierrez?
I think it's significant, and here's why. I think it creates sort of the uncomfortable conversations that you are sort, that a lot of people have to have. And I'm not sure about everybody else, but this has been happening a lot in my social circles, within my family, my extended family. And it, if you were to be watching a game and you see a player, I don't know, saying defund the police on the back of his jersey and have, I don't know, Mike Breen and company have a discussion about that during the broadcast rather than just some blanket statement that a lot of people are not really going to understand or have their own beliefs on, then I think it can create those conversations in your own household. And I do believe that that's part of the reason, or large part of the reason, why a lot of these players are okay with doing so and coming back to play, because they can still get messages across. And frankly, that was actually part of our, I'm not even sure if I should be saying this, but we had an NBA team discussion about how we can do our part to get messages across. And if we can work with players to make that happen during broadcast, I think that helps everybody.
It makes you wonder, though, because it appeared with the NWSL this weekend, there were teams who were not ready for that conversation. There were players, to read from Kim McCauley's piece on All for 11, that the teams were pitted against each other, teammates, I should say, were pitted against each other because they didn't agree with each other's stance in this. And that's something to watch out for here, too. That is our horn, Israel Gutierrez, which means you're going to take a pause right here. And our showdown next will be L. Duncan, Mina Kimes in 2 minutes.
Around the Horn is presented by Corona Extra. Find your beach. Part of Happy Hour.
Whenever you guys get the schedule, the first thing you do is you look for your road trips. And for this NBA restart, ooh, I get to go to the arena today. Ooh, I get to go to the arena again today on the monorail. That's Israel's life. Games from 12:30 to midnight. And, well, there's a whole lot more. L. Duncan, I know you broke this down on SportsCenter. What about this schedule jumps out to you?
Oh, opening night, Jazz and the Pelicans, because do the Jazz 2 franchise players in Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell, are they actually all good after Gobert infected Mitchell with coronavirus?
Yeah, all right. Mina Kimes?
Here's what jumped out to me. The Wizards and Suns not having any national televised games. Do you know why, Tony? Because they shouldn't be there, all right? If you need more evidence of that, it's the fact that we're not even going to watch them.
Yeah, if you're not even on TV or you're even in the restart, you're absolutely right about that. Point times. We'll move on. Another restart to talk about. MLB hasn't released the full schedule yet. July 23, though. New York Post reporting it'll be the New York Yankees versus the defending champion Washington Nationals. Could be Max Scherzer versus Gerrit Cole. Will not be Ryan Zimmerman. He's opting not to play this season. He won't be in the restart for the Nationals. Mina, did baseball get something right here with Scherzer and Cole and the Yankees and the Nats?
Yeah, it's a great pitching matchup, but I'm dubious of the Nationals beyond that because they don't really have a ton of pitching depth, which means they might suffer in this shortened season. So I think they need to get off to a hot start.
Oh, she's dubious. Okay, Elle, how about you?
Oh, I'm so in on this game, but only because I want to see how the Nationals, who benefited greatly from all their group celebrations, exist now in this world where they have to socially distance 6 feet apart.
I am not dubious. Indubitably, the winner today, Mina Kimes, 30 seconds of FaceTime.
All right, I slandered the Nationals, so now I'm going to remind Washington fans of their glorious victory, and of course, the song that followed them everywhere, Baby Shark. Some people would like to forget it. Not Gerardo Parra, the veteran player who brought the song to the Nationals. In fact, he brought it all the way to Japan, where he's playing for the Yomiuri Giants. They have embraced him. They have embraced the song. They're doing the dance, and they're winning. So there must be something to it.
Watch yourself, Israel. We can get in trouble here. We don't own the rights to the song. Bismarcky once asked us to cease and desist playing a song of his, so we have to watch out with King Kong and Baby Shark. We're back tomorrow.